Parvati Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Devastan aham vibhno mam japshata rakshata ohome yaksha rakshamsi praja yuyam bubuvita Devastan aham vibhno mam japshata rakshata oho me yaksha rakshamsi praja yuyam babhuvita Devaha, Lord Brahma, Tan, to them, Aha, said, Sambhavigna, being anxious, Ma, do not, Mam, me, jakshata, eat, rakshata, protect, aho, oh, me, my, yaksha rakshansi, oh, yakshas and rakshasas, vajaha, sons, Yuyam, you, Babuvita, were born. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Brahma, the head of the demigods, full of anxiety, asked them, Do not eat me, but protect me. You were born from me and have become my sons. Therefore, you are yakshas and rakshasas. Purport. The demons who were born from the body of Brahma were called yakshas and rakshasas because some of them cried that Brahma should be eaten, and others cried that he should not be protected. The ones who said that he should be eaten were called yakshas. And the ones who said that he should not be protected became rakshasas, man-eaters. The two, yakshas and rakshasas, are the original creation by Brahma and are represented even unto today in the uncivilized men who are scattered all over the universe. They are born of the mode of ignorance. And therefore, because of their behavior, they are called rakshasas, or man-eaters. These rakshasas are not imaginary, fictional creatures. They walked the earth. 5,000 years ago, they were seen. They were a real threat. Just like there are still some tigers in the jungles of the Sundarbans, in Bengal, and they go to the villages and eat people. This is not a fiction. These are not fictional monsters. They're real man-eating tigers. You can go to the zoo and see some, but they're actually still there. So if we accept the Mahabharata as history, We may not have seen any Rakshasas reported in the newspapers in recent years. Maybe there's some Yeti in Tibet, this abominable snowman, but no one has caught one. No one has taken a photograph. You know this big monster in Tibet that people think they have seen, or in Nepal maybe. So no proof. But if we take the Bhagavatam, the Mahabharata as Shastra, Panchamam Karshnyam Vedam, the Mahabharata written by Krishna, Dvaipayana and Vyasa is called the Karshna Veda. It is considered the fifth Veda. It is, for those who accept the authority of the Vedas, they should accept the authority of the Mahabharata. As history, not as just story, but history. So, Mahabharata describes, Rakshasas were threatening the human race. When the Pandavas visited Brajabhumi, they stayed for some time in Kamyavan. And there was a Rakshasa named Baka who was eating people. The villagers had made an arrangement that once a month they would deliver one of their own people plus a big cartload of food for the Rakshasa, and then he would not attack people other times. But the family of Brahmanas with whom the Pandavas were staying, it was their turn. They had to deliver one of their family members, and they were arguing, no, let me go. The children were saying, the mother, the son, the daughter were saying, no, we're not of much use, send us. The wife was saying, no, send me. The husband was saying, oh, no, I'll go. And the Pandavas heard this. And Bhima offered, don't worry, I'll go. I've already killed two or three Rakshasas. I can handle it. You send me and I'll take care of this Bakasura. And he did. So the Rakshasas are real. But it's not that they're now extinct or that they're hiding in some caves or only living in Antariksha or on the top of the Himalayas, Rakshasas. Prabhupada says they're scattered all over the world in the form of uncivilized men. We've got Rakshasas walking on the streets of New York and Bombay. Millions of them. Our modern civilization is Rakshasa civilization. They're not literally eating, they're not cannibals literally. Almost. They're a little bit tamed. Sometimes the Rakshasas avoid eating human flesh. There are sometimes some semi-civilized Rakshasas, like Bhima's own son, Ghatotkacha. I don't know if he was, maybe not vegetarian, but I don't know if he was eating human beings. He was a cultured Rakshasa, a pious Rakshasa. So you have Rakshasa, okay, they're not eating the good citizens of New York and Mumbai. Are not literally jumping on each other in the street and eating one another, but almost. Their behavior is almost on that level. We can certainly, with all justification, call this modern civilization that everyone is so eager to pursue as Rakshasa, Yaksha Rakshasa civilization. Just, how does Krishna describe it in the Gita? Prabhavant ugra karmano kshaya jagato hita. Such persons that we can designate as demons. Daityas, Danavas, Yakshas are pious, Rakshasas. You can see by the nature of the work that they like to engage in. Ugra karma. Horrible. Painful. Unhealthy. Destructive work. For the maintenance of their life. The Rakshasa will justify himself. I have to eat. I have to feed my family. And our food is human flesh. What is the fault? We're just following our dharma. They can say that. But that dharma, that karma, is ugra karma. Terrible. It's not nice to eat flesh, especially human flesh. A civilized human being is repelled by it. And even if it's not on that level, this demoniac civilization is engaged only in ugra karma, in horrible, destructive, self-destructive activities. People are destroying their bodies, their minds, by the very food they eat, especially. First comes the food. Ahara shuddhe sattva shuddhi. By purifying what you eat, by being pure in your eating habits, your consciousness becomes pure. And vice versa. By eating unpurely, by eating contaminated food, you become contaminated. Vishayir anakoile mano hoya dushta. By eating the food, even rice. So rice is the simplest food, or the purest food. In Sati Yuga, a person who was spiritually advanced could live just by eating, just by breathing air. He wouldn't even have to eat anything if he was very spiritually advanced. That was possible for a human being. Theoretically possible. In Treta Yuga, a human being could live if he was very disciplined and spiritually advanced. He could live just by drinking water. Survive. And in Dwarpa Yuga, even as recently as Dwarpa Yuga, a human being could possibly live just by drinking milk. And in Kali Yuga, human beings can eat just rice and live. Nothing else. That's what it said. So that's simplest food, purest food. Simple rice, even without any sabji. No achar, nothing, no rotis. You can live just on rice. Not an opulent diet. And it may not keep you extremely healthy, but you can survive. Because it's almost complete food. So, but even just the rice, even if you don't eat anything that in itself is contaminating, rice is supposed to be pure. But if the consciousness of the person who cooks it is impure, then rice absorbs the karma even more than other foods. More than any other food, the rice absorbs the mentality of the person who prepares it and offers it. And what if he doesn't offer it? Then we're eating only sin. If we don't offer our food to the Lord, then it's sinful, even if it's the purest vegetarian. So if you eat the rice, especially the rice, but anna also means any food that's been the food of a materialist, that means it's been cooked by materialists, by non-devotees, it's been offered to you by non-devotees without offering it to Krishna first. If you eat that, your mind will become contaminated. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was careful about where he ate, to set an example. Not only would he not eat in the house of non-Brahmins and non-Vaishnavas, he would not eat in the house of anyone who is not a lakhpati. And it doesn't mean that he had to be a rich man. It means that he had to chant one lakh of Harinam every day. Otherwise he would not eat in the man's house. But if we indulge in eating the food of materialists, then we become contaminated. Even the rice. Of course we have to eat. Sometimes we're traveling and we have to eat something. There are various ways. Well, you depend on Krishna's mercy. You take what you have to do. Do what you have to do. But at least there's no excuse just because you're traveling. You don't offer the food. You're in a rush. No. It's, whatever it is, you should offer it. It should be offerable. And you should offer it, even if you're on the run. You can take a few seconds to make some sort of offering mentally. Prabhupada, when he was traveling, he you know, like in a train station, he would take something like hot samosas, because by being cooked, by being hot, that purified the food. By purchasing the food, that purifies it. But ideally, one should only eat what's been offered properly by a Vaishnav to Krishna. And one should sit down properly and take it in a peaceful place, honoring the prasadam. Then we avoid all contamination and get the highest benefit. This is human civilization. This is divine civilization. It begins with how we eat. Krishna defines eating in the three modes. Sattva, ragya, balo, rogya. What is it? Bala, rogya, sukha. I'm sorry, I can't remember. Vivardhanaha. This is food in the mode of goodness. It promotes your health. It promotes your happiness and peacefulness. Rasya snigda stira vidya ahara sattvika priyaha. These are foods in the mood of goodness that are not dry and tasteless, but juicy and healthy tasting. They contain some substance. Prabhupada says fatty. That doesn't mean full of grease, but it has some substance to it. This is food in the mode of goodness, whereas food in the mode of passion is agitating to the senses and can cause disease. Katvamla lavanat yushna tikshna rukshna ruksha vidahinaha ahara rajasashishta dukashoka amaya pradaha. Food that is katu. Pratu is bitter. Amla, too sour. Lavana, very salty. Atyushna, too hot, too much chili. In previous times, the Brahmanas did not take many chilies. This is just a modern thing. Tikshna, ruksha, you know, very sharp, pungent taste. And dry, not juicy. These foods promote disturbance of the mind, disturbance of the body, and then you become sick and agitated. These are foods in the mode of goodness, and foods in the mode of passion are just unhealthy, contaminated, old, decomposing. These are foods in the mode of ignorance and unofferable foods. Bhojanam tamasam priyam. So we understand from the Gita what is good food and what is bad food. But beyond that, there is transcendental food. What has been offered to Krishna and accepted by him, that is his prasad. And that is not in the category of sattvika ahara. That is transcendental. And by that, we become devotees. So what we eat is extremely important. Those who are unregulated, who are unclean in their eating habits, then their consciousness and their behavior will be unclean. That's the nature of demons. And it's very dangerous for a devotee to not keep his eating under control. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns, Jivar lalase je iti uti dai shishnodara parayana nahi krishna pai. Dire warning that if out of the uncontrolled hankering of the tongue you are running here and there to restaurants, to rich people's houses just to get nice food, then you'll become the slave of your belly and your genitals, and you won't obtain Krishna. At least you'll be delayed by this distraction. So devotees have to keep their eating under control. It's a service to Krishna to honor prasadam. We shouldn't be looking just to find nice food. Especially those in the renounced order.
Lord Chaitanya, well, he told Raghunath Das Goswami the advice how to practice renunciation. Raghunath Das is the most perfect renouncer. But he learned, he got his instructions directly from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bala na kaila. Don't eat too nicely. And don't dress too nicely. Prabhupada put it this way. We should be dressing like sadhus, not like babus. You know, we should dress decently. We should just present ourselves nicely for preaching, but not luxuriously. You know, we want to make a good image, but not the image that we're rich babus. You know, that we're simple sadhus. So we should dress simply. And we should eat not too fancy. Especially if we want to live a renounced life. We want to keep the senses under control. Jihwa vegam, how's it begin? Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jihwa vegam, udaro pasta vegam, etan vegan, yo visheheta dira, sarvam api mam, prithivim sa shishyat. Rupa Goswami's first verse of the Upadeshamrita. So many sadhus, they put together some verses, Upadeshamrita. It's a common format. Every Mayavadi has got his Upadeshamrita, 10 verses or 12 verses, summing up the little philosophy he's made up. But this is Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita, his simple summary of his teachings, which are something worth paying attention to. And the very first instruction is that it's advisable that we control our senses. Vacho vegam, manasa krodho vegam. Begin by controlling your speech. Of course, we learned that the tongues should be controlled first. Sevam mukehi jivadal. Going back to Ataksha, I think it's Padma Purana, quoted by Rupa Goswami in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabhave Grahyam Indriyai Sevam Mukehi Jihwadao Swayameva Spuratyadaha. Krishna, you cannot find Krishna with your material senses. He keeps himself out of the range. You cannot capture him with your mind and senses. But with a service attitude, Krishna will reveal himself. But how do you cultivate Krishna consciousness, a service attitude? By using those same senses that on their own cannot capture Krishna. Use the service senses for serving Krishna. Where do you start? Jivadao. Start with the tongue. We chant Hare Krishna and we eat the food that's been offered to Krishna. That is the beginning of devotional service. And it's a good beginning, solid beginning. It's enough. Do that only, and you'll become perfect. You don't have to do anything else. Two things. Chant Hare Krishna and eat prasadam. And you can sleep the rest of the day, and you'll still become perfect. One devotee was complaining to Prabhupada. I saw it in writing, so it may be true, that he had a big problem with wanting to sleep all the time. Just his nature, tamasic nature. Couldn't get up and do anything. Prabhupada said, okay, you just chant 16 rounds and sleep, and you'll go back to Godhead. At least we should sleep and eat prasadam, not eat garbage, eat prasadam. That is enough. At least that's the beginning. That's a solid basis of our devotional service. Okay, but the question is, okay, the tongue does two things. It eats, it takes food in, and it puts words out. There's input and output. The input is food, the output is words. Which one do we deal with first? Rupa Goswami's opinion he specifies more clearly in the Upadeshamrita, Vacho Vegam first. Jiva Vegam is on the second half of the list. First, watch out what you say. And instead of just jabbering nonsense, use your tongue to chant Hare Krishna. That's the first thing. Chant Krishna's names. And then, so what's the order? Jiva vegam, manasa krodha vegam. Control your mind.
what you're thinking. Especially envious, hateful thoughts against Vaishnavas. Don't do that. Krodha vegam. And don't let yourself get under the control of anger, because then you'll lose control of yourself. Jiva vegam. Then, eating. Eat properly. Eat prasadam. Udara upasta vegam. Udara and upasta. Well, actually, these three, the last three are connected together. There's a direct connection through the digestive system from the tongue to the belly, stomach, to the genitals. If your tongue is out of control, your stomach will become distressed. And if your stomach is distressed, your genitals become agitated. Vice versa. Keep the tongue under control, the belly will be under control, and the genitals will be under control. So those three go together. One, etan vegan yo visheheta dhira. Someone who can control all six of those, he's called dhira. A sober, sagacious, wise person who can control himself. And not only that, sarvamapi mam prithivim sashishat. He can go around the world, anywhere in the world, and make disciples. He can preach for Krishna. So it's significant that Rupa Goswami, who is known by the Babaji's as the founder of our Raghunuga Panta, he's also the founder of our preaching movement. First verse, first thing he emphasizes in the Upadeshamrita is the qualification for preaching. If going around the world and making disciples was not something that should be done, why would he mention it? Why would he mention the qualifications for it? Just like if someone says, you know, writes a poem or a book and mentions in the beginning the qualifications for being a thief. You know, you should know how to pick locks. You should know how to throw powder in people's eyes to make them fall asleep. You should, you know how to be quiet and sneak out fast. The qualifications of a thief. Then you can be a good thief. So that must mean, first verse in his book, that he's promoting becoming a thief. He thinks it's a good idea. For somebody, at least. So Rupa Goswami, in his first verse, is giving the qualifications for preaching around the world and making disciples. If we're not supposed to do that, why is he saying giving us the qualifications for it, if it's not recommended and desirable? So it is. We want to attain love of Radha Krishna, we should preach. And that is not something made up by Prabhupada, by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The idea is Rupa Goswami's. The idea is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. Yare deko tahai koho Krishna upadesh. Amara gyai guru haya tare desh. And he spoke this to a householder who was simply living in his village and wanted to leave his family and join Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, don't, you stay home in your village. What am I going to do here in the village? Nothing's happening here in my village. No. You have your villagers, the people you know. You may think, they're just a bunch of gongwalas. So what? I want to leave them and go with you and have some interesting times. No, you stay home in your village. And whoever you meet in the village, you tell them about something about Krishna. You become the guru here. And save this place. Don't worry about, you know, all over India and all over the world. You have your village, you save it. This is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. To a simple devotee. Not just to some great sannyasi. To a simple grihastha. He told him, you preach. This is the not some new thing concocted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. You know, it's not some bogus idea. It is the original idea of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That we should spread Krishna consciousness, not just keep it for ourselves. Anyway, this may be a little bit away from the topic. The topic was how Brahma created the demons. But we're living in a demoniac world. As Prabhupada points out in the purport, the demons are there. They're still there.
and they're scattered all over the world. Or, to even understand it better, in Kali Yuga, there's a demon living in everybody's body. All we have to see the demons, all we have to do is look in the mirror. And this is what we have to deal with. Demoniac environment, demoniac civilization, and we have to fight against it. When enemies attack, you have to defend. So Krishna consciousness is being attacked by this demoniac influence. We can't just sit back and save ourselves. We have to fight and defeat the enemy, to fight, defeat this demoniac civilization and replace it with a transcendental civilization. That is Prabhupada's mission. That's why he organized all these passionate devotees from the West and from India, people who can do something. He empowered them because he wanted to organize a movement that can defeat the demoniac influence and establish transcendental Krishna conscious civilization. Not just save a few people, but save the world. That's the mission of Prabhupada. Okay, so I'll stop there. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, that was to one person.
The devotees in the dream are the
That's abnormal. Most devotees need to do more, and Krishna wants them to do more. So that is a special situation. You have to have special authority from your spiritual master just to do that only. Yeah, and it's because he couldn't do more. So Prabhupada was kind and said, "Okay, you do what you can. But if you can do something, why be a miser? And be lazy. Do everything you can for Krishna to help save the world." Yes, he can save himself, but he's not going to save the world by sleeping. He may save himself by chanting Hare Krishna.
Jai Shri Krishna.
There's so many people who chant some rounds and then go to sleep. Either literally, or they do something that's not much more useful than going to sleep. So they may save themselves because they're chanting Krishna's names and they're not doing nonsense. But they won't do much to help save the world unless they get up and do something. Do something. So that's just a special case. Exceptional. Do you have any
questions?
Yes.
Qualifications are requirements, but if you look at
he does that to make a point that if you can just do that, yes, you can become guru. But go ahead. You know, the challenge is there. The non-devotees, try to do all these things on your own power. In Kali Yuga, with all your conditioning. Try to control all six. Maybe you can control three or four. But all six. If you're not a devotee, you won't be able to do it. Show me any non-devotee who has controlled his mind and his tongue and his genitals and everything. You know, perfect sadhu. He may put on a show of being a good sadhu or a perfect sadhu. He may let his disciples advertise him as Satguru. But look at him closely. How sat is he? If he's not a devotee, forget it. A Krishnava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadguna. If someone's not a devotee, this is spoken 5,000 years ago. What to speak of today? If someone's not a devotee, what kind of good qualities can he have? So that's Rupa Goswami's daring to say this, not to even mention being Krishna conscious. Because we should know that. We should know that without being a devotee of Krishna, you can't have these ability, capacity to control yourself. Only you can do it partly, but not completely. Not all six. Give me one example of a non-devotee who actually fits that qualification.
Well, sometimes you know that my body is really full of subsidiaries. I mean,
Yeah, but what about the first one, Vachovikam? They open their mouth and speak only nonsense. If they're speaking Mayavadi philosophies, then they're not, the Vachovikam is way out of control. They're just talking nonsense. So that's not Vachovikam. That's not control of Vachovikam. That's indulgence in all speaking all kinds of nonsense. If you have a Mayavadi who never opens his mouth, then maybe he's more qualified. But as soon as they open their mouths, they're disqualified. So, a Mayavadi who has taken complete Manavrata, maybe he's less harmful. But, anyway. He also, Rupa Goswami also clarifies a few verses later, yes.
Yeah, a few
verses later, like Krishna Giritam. First of all, you know, you should offer respect to someone who chants Krishna's name. And then someone who takes Diksha in the Vaishnav line and is worshipping Krishna, the Supreme Lord. He's the person you should offer bow down to. And the devotee, the Vaishnav, who has those first two qualifications, he's chanting Krishna's name, he's taken Vaishnav initiation, and then if he's completely free of envy, he's the person you should accept as spiritual master. So that's clarified in that later verse. If there's any doubt remaining, Rupa Goswami clears it up soon in a few verses. Is there anything else? No? Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.